Good day to our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM, and welcome to everyone tuning in over the internet at cjtr.ca, over Sastel Max at channel 806 and channel 341 on Access Communications Digital Service. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers, who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. I'm Jim Hutchings, and joined by my co-host Mona Hill, and we're going to talk about water. Yesterday, March 15th, 2012, 20,000 delegates from 180 companies began attending a six-day World Water Forum in Marseille, France. The meeting comes amid growing global concern about resource scarcity and future water shortages. Joining us is Regina activist Hillary Craig. Welcome, Hillary.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here, Jim.
And Hillary was born and raised in Zimbabwe. In 1965, she came to study in Canada, where she met her life partner, David. Hillary's family has lived in Ontario, Zimbabwe, and Saskatchewan. She has worked as an educator, a career counselor, and in the field of literacy. In recent years, she has become particularly interested and involved in examining and improving the suburban environment. So once again, welcome. And I think water is a particularly appropriate topic to discuss today. We became aware that Prince Albert had a boil water advisory there for a little while. Has it been lifted now?
I think it has, yes, for the city of Prince Albert, but not for the surrounding rural areas yet.
Okay, and World Water Day is the 22nd of March, and this is Canada Water Week. We're in the middle of it right now, is that?
That's right.
Okay, so there's a good start. Mona.
What's the big deal about water? Doesn't the earth have lots of water?
Well, it does. Mm-hmm. It has lots of water, but not necessarily where it needs to be. And it's diminishing. The biggest issue probably is the supplies of water mm-hmm. are diminishing rapidly. And there's some places where it's much worse than others. And Saskatchewan's on the endangered list in the long term.
That's hard to imagine, really, with all the water we have up north. And yeah. Amnesty International perspective on water currently, through our Demand Dignity campaign, we're concerned in particular about what's happening in New Zealand. I mean, we're concerned about water everywhere, but here's some facts for you. A staggering 1.1 billion people do not have access to safe drinking water, and around 42% of the world's population, or 2.2 billion people, live without means of sanitation. About 1.6 million deaths a year are estimated to be caused by unsafe water. So we may have water, but is it all safe water? Is it all clean water? And, you know, Jim mentioned the boil water. And this has been happening, as you say, Hillary, you know, issues with water in Saskatchewan. We've had quite a few boil water sort of crises over the past couple of years in Saskatchewan.
Ironically, I think, Mona, that this is actually a good news story.
Okay.
we are so... We take for granted the supply of clean, safe water that we have. And because we take that for granted, we don't realize the complexity of the system that's in place to make sure that it happens.
That's a very good point.
So that when it happens, as it has in Prince Albert, it's an indication to me of two things. First thing is that we have a system. Mm-hmm. The second thing is that the people who are running the system are in charge and taking notice of what needs to be taken notice of. And inevitably in complex engineering projects, right, things are going to break from time to time.
Right.
So, as I said, to me it's a good news story. Now, the less good news is that there are places in Saskatchewan where there isn't clean water. Mm-hmm. One thinks of reserves, particularly.
Totally.
And that is a huge issue for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And I would also go back to saying about the boil water advisory is I didn't hear any news about anybody being sick. So presumably they caught it before mm-hmm. there were any negative human consequences.
Okay.
I'm sure it caused a lot of hassle for people. I'm not going to minimize that. But the fact remains is that we take for granted that we have clean and safe water, and we do.
Right.
And we are, unlike the 1 in 6 people who live in Asia, Africa, or Latin America, who don't have this access. Mm-hmm. And the fact remains that we can go to the tap and drink the water, brush our teeth, mm-hmm. cook, wash our dishes, and it's safe as anything.
Right.
One thing that's worth noting as well, that in most cases, the water coming out of your tap is better for you than bottled water.
Absolutely, and I'm glad you raised the issue of bottled water, Jim. I have a real strong feeling about this particular issue, because I think that it's one that has, the need, quote unquote, for bottled water is a need that has been created mm-hmm. by marketers and by companies that want to make a lot of money. Think Coke, think Pepsi Cola. And not only have they created a need which is totally ridiculous, but they've also done huge amounts of environmental and social damage in the process. And it brings to my mind a particular instance in India, in Kerala State, where Coke came in and everybody was happy because this plant was bringing employment to the local people. But very soon, the amount of water being used by this bottling plant, in fact, started to deplete the local reserves. It meant that the people didn't any longer have the clean water that they had access to, or not enough of it, that their agriculture, their crops were impacted by the effects of this bottling plant. And it's a classic case that we don't realize that, in fact, every bottle of water has a huge impact on the environment. So I think it takes something like 3 liters of water to produce 1 liter bottle of water.
That was something I was not aware of.
Yes. Well, I mean, there are a whole range of things that need to be involved in this. One, of course, is the manufacture of the plastic for the bottles. Mm-hmm. And that takes a lot of water. Now, of course, Coke has this wonderful green bottle project, the plant bottle that they produce for the Dasani water, which is just a whole marketing.
Is it a crock?
It's a crock.
It's funny that you should bring up Coca-Cola, because at the top of the hour, Jim was saying that, yesterday the World Water Forum started, and organizers, say more than 20,000 delegates from 180 countries will be attending. It just so happens that the French President Nicolas Sarkozy is expected to attend, along with European Commission President José Manuel Barroso, King Mohammed VI of Morocco, and the CEOs of Nestle and Coca-Cola.
And believe it or not, that in spite of the fact that the water they produce has a huge impact on the environment in other ways, when you just think of the cost of transporting that water. For example, this is not Coke in this case, but there's a bottled water called Fiji. And it comes from this pristine reservoir underneath Fiji. So it never sees the light of day until it gets into the bottle. But can you think of how much energy is used to produce and bottle that water and then bring it across the ocean to Canada? I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah.
And I just want to remember, my husband made a comment last night when we were talking about this, that every time he goes to a work-related event, there's bottled water provided.
Right.
And here we are in Regina, there's no bottled water advisory. There's absolutely mm-hmm. no necessity for this. So it's ridiculous. I actually went to my local Safeway, which is not a particularly big one, just to have a look at where the bottled water came from, and I was quite amazed. Now, the very expensive brands like Perrier, San Pellegrino, and Gerolsteiner Steiner come from France, Italy, and Germany. But the Nestle comes from Hope, BC. Aquafina, Pepsi, is from High River, Alberta. Evian from France. Refresh from Alberta. Dasani, I couldn't find out quite where it came from. The Fiji, of course, comes from Fiji. Pure Life from Maine, USA, and I couldn't figure out from the bottle where the Safeway water came from. But I thought, this is absolutely insane that we can go to the tap, turn on the water, get a glass of water with no intervening problems with bottles or anything like that. And this is coming from all of these distant places. Now, I think I know that some of the big bottles, like the one we have outside here,
mm-hmm.
the big bottles that people buy to put on their cooler, that some of that comes from local sources.
Yeah, I think they might do the reverse.
I think they actually filter it and
reverse osmosis. Yeah,
yes.
I think so.
So that actually probably is local water, but mm-hmm. that means that probably 95%, if not more, of that water comes from far away, so that we're using trucks and trains hauling this, and ships. Ridiculous.
Right.
I can't think of anything sillier.
Yeah.
And then what happens to all the garbage that's produced?
Well, yeah. Where does all that go?
Well, there was one case I read about bottles being transported by boat to India from the United States and put on a garbage dump in India.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know what happens on the garbage dumps in India. Among other things, of course, you're getting all sorts of people scavenging.
Sure.
Right.
So their human rights and their water and their life
mm-hmm.
is not exactly improved by that. So that's a huge part of the whole thing.
There are cities that are starting to ban water bottles. I know there's a couple in the United States. A number of universities, student societies have taken this on, and the University of Regina has, student society has as well. I just happen to be there this week for a meeting, and there's signs all over that they're trying to get rid of bottled water from the university. So kudos to them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think that people need to be taking this back to their workplace,
mm-hmm.
To the people they work with, to their churches, to all sorts of places, and saying, you know, this is just absolutely unacceptable. This is one little thing that all of us can do. Can we make much difference to what happens in the bigger issues? We may not be able to, but on this one, we certainly can.
It's kind of insidious when you think about it. I can think of public buildings where water fountains have been turned off, and you've got drink machines pushed in front of them.
Yes.
You know.
Exactly.
The article that I have here from The Guardian about the World Water Forum, there's an interesting quote in here. It's no longer sufficient for water experts to draft technical proposals behind closed doors. Instead, it's necessary to open up water management to society as a whole and recognize that efficiency and productivity gains alone cannot alter global patterns of unequal supply of resources and consumption or access to benefits.
One of the things that a couple of things come to my mind as you were saying that. The one is that, I've just totally lost my train of thought.
Oh, I do that all the time.
Oh, dear. That if even we took a small portion of the profits that have come from bottled water and plowed that back into the money that goes to making bottled water and plowed that back into making more water accessible to more people across the globe, that would be great. Now, the irony of this is, well, no, it's not an irony, it's a marketing thing, that Coke and Pepsi and those all have foundations for doing things for people in other places.
Yes.
Where they don't have drinkable water and so on.
Right.
And I mean, really, the damage that they're doing is, it's sort of like an indulgence, you know,
mm-hmm.
in the old days when...
You know, they want to be perceived as the good guys.
When they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the forum talks about allocation being inevitably going to the highest paying sector or region. This may result in an increasingly significant portion of people not being able to satisfy their basic needs for food, energy, water, and sanitation. So, you know, we're getting into this concept of corporatization of water. And then there's a criticism of this, of course. It costs as much as 700 euros for full access, caters to the interests of big business to have this forum in
yes.
Europe, and gives corporations opportunities to advance their interests by facilitating direct access to high-ranking government officials. So it's pandering. Starting on Wednesday, activists there are staging alternative World Water Forum to promote alternatives to privatization and share experiences on how to promote public and community-led water management from the bottom up.
Very interesting. It was interesting that I went on the internet and was looking at various events on Canada Water Week, and they had a map of events happening across Canada. So I clicked on the one that was in Regina, and this is the only event that's in Regina for Canada Water Week. And this was an event which was only for sort of managers of plants and things like that. There was absolutely nothing for ordinary people, which I thought was kind of sad. And I thought, we need to be doing this. We need to be drawing this attention. And I'd just like to tell a little story here.
Go ahead.
As Jim said in my introduction, I'm originally from Zimbabwe. And in the early 80s, my family and I were living in Harare, the capital of Zimbabwe. And at that time, it was a time of terrible drought. And we had water rationing. Now, this wasn't the kind of water rationing people have here where you could only water your lawn on alternate days. This meant that we had something like so many liters that we could use in a month. And if we used more than that, we would have our water cut off. And there was such a little water that we used all sorts of things to reuse water. For example, we watered plants with the bath water. We took the water from the dishwasher and did various things. Now, an interesting thing came up. Like most middle class people, we had people who worked for us. We had servants, and there were a lot of conflicts between the people who owned the property and the servants, because what happened was that the servants, who were mostly peasants who'd come from the rural areas, would wash the dishes and just leave the water running. And they would get the homeowners would get really angry at these really stupid people. Now, what I have to say is that...
So you say that in quotes, right?
I'm saying that in quotes,
yeah, exactly.
Yes. That those of us who had cars and were middle class could go out to the reservoir and we could see how low the level of the water was. Now, for the people who worked for us, these were people who went everywhere on foot or on the bus if they were lucky. And they had no idea where the water came from. They turned on the tap, the water came out. Hey, what's the problem? Now, if they were in the rural areas, they would know very well. You go down to the river, there's nothing in the river. Hey, there's a problem. Or you go to the well and it's dry. There's a problem. But they didn't have any idea about the very complex process by which water comes to us. So, you know, it was, in a sense, to me, I said I worked in the literacy field. It was a literacy issue.
Yes.
That if you don't understand where the water comes from, you don't necessarily make those connections. Now, having said that, I've done workshops with grade 8 students in Regina, and I asked the students, do you know where our water comes from? Now, how many of the average class of 25 kids, say, do you think knows where our water in Regina comes from?
I don't know, maybe 10%.
How about none?
Oh, my goodness.
You know, they might get as far as Buffalo Pound.
Okay. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But certainly not, no understanding of the fact that in our water comes mostly from the South Saskatchewan River, which in turn comes from the rapidly melting glaciers.
Right.
And this raises huge issues for us down the road as the glaciers are melting. And in fact, Saskatchewan is a semi-arid region.
Mm-hmm.
If we look, there are huge portions of Saskatchewan, of the southern part of Saskatchewan, where there is no groundwater, or where the water is so horrible that people and villagers even have to have their water trucked in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we tend to think of water problems as existing in Africa or Latin America, but nobody. They exist right here in Saskatchewan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got all these that internal drainage basins where the water doesn't have anywhere to go. And when that happens, it inevitably gets salty and saline.
And then it smells like sulfur, doesn't
it? And it tastes like, you know, it's terrible.
Yeah.
So that we've got issues here just as much as we've got issues in Africa or Latin America.
I can remember in the 1980s when we had a bit of a drought here. I was living in Weyburn, and we didn't have the large reservoir there that we do now. And we did have to take measures like using your bath water or your dish water to water the garden and things like that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And before we go to our break in a couple of minutes, I wanted to point out that for those of you who are not aware of that, according to the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, everyone has a right to an adequate and healthy standard of living, and it's implicitly recognized that access to water is an inalienable human right that governments must guarantee their citizens. And we have touched on the corporatization of water, and whether or not citizens can afford to buy water. And you know, a specific instance that I'm thinking about that might sort of turn it on its head is many years ago, I was in Calgary visiting someone who had a couple of cats in the house. And I got up one morning to use the bathroom, and I walked in, and the tap was running slightly. So I thought, oh, they forgot to turn the tap off. So I turned off the tap, and I was there for a few days. And after a couple of days, one of the people in the house came to me and said, are you turning the bathroom tap off? I said, yes, I thought you guys were forgetting to turn it off or something was going on. And she said to me, that water is running for my cats. because it's nice cold water, and they can come and drink it anytime they want, 24/7. And I was from Manitoba at the time, and I said, well, how much are you paying for this? And she said, this was Calgary many years ago. She said, the water's free, so it doesn't matter. And even at that time, over 20 years ago, I was stunned at her response. It Absolutely. May be free, but it's so wasteful. And yes. so we have this environment that we've grown up in, that water is free. Mm-hmm. So now to turn that on its head, charging for that water would totally change a person's mind as to how much water they're using.
It changes to some extent, but I remember back to the grade 8 class and the kids who took half an hour showers.
True, yeah.
you know,
and
they don't
there's a difference,
mean.
I guess, between being a child who's not paying the household bills, you know,
exactly.
and an adult, you know.
Exactly.
Like, you know.
And a difference when you have to carry it.
Oh, yes.
You know, I was thinking, I've just got a little fact here that in South Africa, there are many people who pay between 5 and 20% of their daily income for water.
Sure.
And I mean,
you can
bet that they're using a pail.
Yeah.
And they're not using a bath.
And this is something that I know about because I collect rainwater. And I've been doing it for years. I have a big barrel underneath my eaves trough, and it collects rainwater from the roof. And in the summertime, I carry buckets of water to water my plants in my yard, you know, to water my rose bushes and my shrubs and that sort of thing. So I understand about carrying the water. But that is just from my backyard to my front yard.
And it's not 5 miles.
Miles and miles, right. So I get that. And when we come back from the break, we're going to talk more about water and the issues that we're facing currently in 2012 and in the future. Take it away, Jim.
So anyway, we'll be back after the break, and we've got a little bit of music as well. So we'll be right back.
It's water music.
Okay, that is The Water Song. Got that off YouTube.
Apparently that's an old song, and it was created in 1969. That's what I remember reading.
I see.
But if you will like that song, you can go onto YouTube, and it's been recorded by a number of different musicians. And it's called The Water Song. This is Human Rights Radio on CJTR, and we're here talking about water and water rights and corporatization of water. And our guest is Hillary Craig, who has done a lot of research on water. It's very important to her. Welcome back, Hillary.
Thank you, Mona. Thank you for having me.
So before the break, you know, we talked about carrying water, about not having accessible water, about the number of the billions of people on Earth that don't have proper sanitation, 2.2 billion, according to Amnesty International, without means of sanitation. And I talked about carrying water from the rainwater that I had collected, that I collect every year from my roof all summer and all spring and, you know, into the winter. And I actually use that rainwater all winter as well. So what I do is empty the rain barrel into my buckets, and then I leave them outside on the back porch. And I bring one into the house and put it in the back porch, and it thaws. And then I use that to water my plants indoors. So virtually until spring, if I happen to run out, my plants get rainwater all year round if I can possibly do it. But as you pointed out, I don't have to walk miles to find water. And that water, my water, is clean water. So walking miles to find water, you might not even find clean water, right?
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, I certainly remember seeing lots of people as a child in rural Zimbabwe who were walking with pails on their head, or usually pails on their head. And it's just an incredibly arduous task. I transported that task in a way into working with grade 8 students. And what I did was I had a pail that I filled with sand that weighed the same amount as the water would, because I didn't want it spilling all over the place. And I had all of the kids walk around the classroom with this pail to just get a sense of how heavy it feels. And I also had them map how far it was from the school to Wascana Lake, which one wouldn't want to drink anyway, and how long, they did that in a computer exercise, and estimate how long it would take them to walk from school to Wascana Lake and back with the full bucket of water. And then I asked them to do an exercise where they would decide how they would use that pail of water. What would they be their priorities? Because we're so used to having such abundant supplies that, you know, yes, we can have a 15-minute, half-an-hour shower. We can run water for the cat to drink. We can run water for all sorts of things when we're washing our hair, whatever. But we don't think about the fact that for one people, one pail of water is a huge amount. Is all they have. And so you have to decide what are your priorities going to be. And it's a really hard decision for us.
I think as you're talking about that, I've thought about shows that we've done in the past and how water represents power.
Absolutely.
Water represents power for, number one, economic power. If you have the power to charge money for water, you have economic power. If you have the power to turn off the water to a community, you have power, such as what's happening quite often in Palestine for punishment, because the access to their water taps is outside of their own community. So they're getting their water turned off, and they can go for days without access to any water. And this relates to the total corporatization of water and the power that people have, who have the money, who have the rights to the water. And I want to refer back to the Amnesty document that said history has shown that privatization further compromises the ability for citizens to enjoy the right to equal, affordable, and physical access to water. Privatization in the Bolivian city of Cochabamba sparked huge protests that shut down the city for four straight days, eventually forcing the government to put water back into the hands of the government. In South Africa, where the right to water is enshrined in the Constitution, a public-private partnership for water services has failed to serve the most vulnerable and poorest citizens with their right to water. And that gives me shivers.
That's where we're going. Yes, it's
And that's horrendous. That's apparently where this World Water Forum is going, and why there is so much protest against it.
Is bringing it in? Yeah, bringing the control to the people who shouldn't have control.
It's all about profit.
Yes.
Yeah.
What can one say?
Yeah, exactly. And then to carry on in that vein, this is occurring in the United States. I mean, I'm sure that a number of our listeners understand that this is happening. And but what I thought was really interesting was I'm going to read this information from the Colorado Senate bill, bill number 09080, and it was passed and signed during the 2009 legislative session. It allows limited collections of the use of precipitation for Colorado landowners. And as you pointed out, I think during our break, Hillary, that some of the eastern United States, where it's very particularly dry, have to be very careful about their water. But at the same time, the changes apply only to residential properties that are supplied by a well or could qualify for a well permit. Landowners will complete a permit application supplied by the Division of Water Resources that will provide notice of their intent to collect precipitation and a description of how they intend to use it. So if you want power and control here, to qualify for a permit, you must meet a minimum of the following criteria. The property on which the collection takes place is residential property. The landowner uses a well or is legally entitled to a well for the water supply. The well is permitted for domestic uses according to a number of sections, and or there is no water supply available in the area from a municipality or water district. The rainwater is collected only from the roof. The water is used only for those purposes that are allowed by and identified on the well permit. In addition, another numbered part of the permit is also a new law that allows developers to apply for approval to be one of 10 statewide pilot projects that harvest rainwater and put it to beneficial but non-essential use in the subdivision. These projects may only operate according to an engineered plan submitted to the state engineer for approval and eventually to the water court. There's a water court. This new law does not apply to all individual homeowners. So try and work your way through that to get water.
I think back to my childhood. You were talking about using the water for your plants. I grew up in an area that's sort of like Old Lakeview. I lived with my grandparents. And
sort of a middle-class neighborhood, right?
Yes, upper middle-class of anything.
Yeah.
And we actually had a borehole on the property, so we had wonderful water from an aquifer. But my grandmother, bless her, always had a water barrel. And all through the rainy season, which was about 5 months of the year, she used the water from the water barrel for the washing.
Right.
For the laundry.
Right.
And, you know, that sort of indelibly is imprinted on me. So are you surprised to know that I have a water barrel, too?
Not at all.
Actually, it's out of commission. Yeah. One of my water barrels broke last
year.
I don't know why. But anyway, it was, you know, even though she was middle class, upper middle class with plenty of money and lots of water, she's
right.
still saved.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate that perspective that she gave to me.
There are other states also that are now making it illegal to collect water or to claim your own ownership as an ordinary citizen over the water. You may not be aware of this, but Utah, Washington, and Colorado, which we spoke about earlier, have long outlawed water. And somebody said that to me. This has been like this for years. They've outlawed individuals from collecting rainwater on their own properties because, according to officials, that rain belongs to someone else.
Can I just jump in here,
yes.
Mona, with something that concerns me in terms of Saskatchewan? We get our water, as we talked about, from the South Saskatchewan River. One of the pieces of legislation that's in place means that the people who asked for access to water get first choice. So that, for example, if we have a large-scale farmer who's irrigating his land in Alberta and asked for that privilege, before we ask for something, he gets it. So that there's a possibility that all sorts of large-scale farmers who are irrigating in Alberta or eastern or western Saskatchewan could drain the South Saskatchewan River down the road when the glaciers have melted. And then there's a further complexity to this in that we've got, you know, a lot of producers of animals. We've got a lot of large cattle farms, stockyards, chicken farms and all sorts of things, which are not only using the water, but also polluting the ground and the aquifers even. And here in Regina, of course, we have right over our biggest aquifer, we have a garbage dump.
I was unaware of that.
Well, it's one of the little
drinking my rainwater.
Well, the water that you're drinking is coming out of the Buffalo Pond.
Yes, it's not coming out of that aquifer, but it's scary that we would put a garbage dump over an aquifer.
Whose thinking was that?
You wonder.
So now in response to that, what you just talked about, a document I have here that says, it's a sort of fight back against enslavement. As long as people believe their rights stem from the government and not the other way around,
yes,
they will always be enslaved. And whatever rights and freedoms we think we still have will be quickly eroded by a system of bureaucratic power that seeks only to expand its control, which I was talking about earlier.
Yes.
And we certainly have been privy to really beginning to understand this in the past few years in our country. Because the same argument that's now being used to restrict rainwater collection could, of course, be used to declare that you have no right to the air you breathe either.
I believe, and I may not be correct about this, but I believe that you're not allowed to have a composting toilet in your house in Regina because it doesn't wash anything down the drain.
Okay.
That's odd.
I believe that. I'm not saying that's a fact.
I've heard something like that as well.
Which you really wonder was when you think of all the water that goes through the flushing system.
I'm going to have to check that out.
How much it would save not to have people using flush toilets.
Flushing, right, right.
It's quite significant.
I know in the past number of years, a lot of people are, so the green concept of going green is, if it's mellow, if it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down.
Yes.
You know, and
I do that.
We literally have tried that. And the problem is if it's mellow, let it yellow, and there's a number of people in the house, you end up with a terribly stained toilet bowl. So then how do you get rid of that, right? I mean, it's not always as easy as it sounds.
No.
Plus, you get guests coming to the house.
So you get a dual flush toilet.
Going back to this concept of the government owning us and telling us what we own and what we don't own, and that they have the right to take something like a basic human right as water and sell it to a corporation.
And when you think of the industrial uses of water, I mean, there are many ways and many places in which water is used in industry. And it doesn't normally go back in its pristine form, let's put it that way. So it's often polluted by the industry. I mean, when you go down east, you see a lot more of that here. But here, the big issue is the large industrial farms, particularly the breeders, stock breeders of various kinds.
Right.
And that is really polluting our water fairly seriously.
Well, and let's go to look at the mining companies as well. I mean, this has been happening for decades.
Oh, yeah.
Go back to, I remember living in Winnipeg over 30, 40 years ago, and Minamata disease coming from, was this a silver mine? One of the mines.
In
Ontario, right on the border of...
Actually, it was a pulp and paper mill.
Was it a paper and pulp and paper
mill? The English River Wabagoon system.
Yeah. Yes. And so the residents that were using the water from that river were being poisoned because of the fish that they were eating from the pulp and paper mill. But the same thing is happening with mining companies as well. Look at, Fort Chipewyan and the Lubicon Cree and northern Quebec And as you stated when we first started this show, that there are particular problems with clean water on First Nation reserves. And all these First Nations reserves are being terribly affected by the mining industry and, as Jim mentioned, the pulp and paper industry as well. We kind of sort of maybe
and
at this point.
And then it's the oil sands, which we haven't even got into. I mean, it's huge.
God. Yes, yes.
And certainly has a
but
huge
But apparently it's
on
clean
water.
Oil. I've heard that it's clean oil.
It's interesting that when you watch the TV ads that some of these oil companies are showing us late at night, showing us how wonderful they're doing. It's the sort of thing that personal scrutiny wouldn't bear this out. Like if you took a trip to Fort McMurray and had a look at the devastation that has been created, it doesn't look anything like the TV ads.
Yeah. I'd just like to just give you a few facts about how much water it takes for various things.
Great.
It takes 4,940 liters of water to make one hamburger.
Oh, my.
It takes 230 liters of water to make 4 liters of milk. It takes 456 liters to produce one egg. And 3,800 liters to produce a 1 kilogram loaf of bread. And 380,000 liters of water to produce a new car. So it just gives you some idea about the fact that we don't even factor in all those uses of water. Now, some of them, you know, are we going to stop having milk? Probably not. But there certainly are a lot of ways in which we don't need to be using it. And then, of course, yes.
And I would expect, too, that there's a philosophy of use that needs to be changed, because I think that in a lot of cases, there you would be able to create strategies which would allow you to recycle the water instead of sort of using it and throwing it away.
That's a good point. You know? I was also reading about a man who owns a car wash in one of the states in the U.S. who was charged with something or other because he was recycling the water from his car wash so that he didn't have to use a lot of water. And he was collecting rainwater to use for his car wash. And he got in trouble for doing that.
I believe that in car washes in here that you have to recycle the water so that you don't let all sorts of pollutants go around, but I really don't know a lot about it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well,
that's my understanding because I'd pursued this issue.
Yeah, I was really surprised to read about that, though, that this fellow, it was a fine he was given for, number one, using rainwater for his car wash rather than purchasing it from the water company, and then there were problems with him recycling the water to use it again and again.
Yeah. So. There are ways that we can recycle a lot using grey water systems.
Sure.
There's lots of things that we can do with the grey water in a more efficient way than carrying a pail out the way you and I do.
Okay. Well, I'd like to know about that.
There are people who have some expertise in this area.
Yeah. And I guess some people might think, well, the cost of getting all the equipment that you might need, you know, is maybe prohibitive.
It's often hard to retrofit, but if you build a house with that sort of thing in mind, you can do a lot more things than you could.
Sure. I mean, if they can do it for heating systems and solar heating and that sort of thing. How much time do we have left in this segment, Jim?
We have a little over 6 minutes.
Okay. I just wanted to end. We're not totally ended yet, but I want to continue reading a little bit about this document that I found. And this is in relation to the United States and the fines that people are receiving and the illegality of collecting your own rainwater. I read earlier that the concept of, because the same argument that's now being used to restrict rainwater collection could, of course, be used to declare that you have no right to the air you breathe either. After all, governments could declare that air to be somebody else's air, and then they could charge you a tax, an air tax or an air royalty, and demand you pay money for every breath you keep alive. I mean, this sounds a little bit ridiculous, but is it really? Just give it time. The government already claims it owns your land and house effectively. If you really think you own your home, try stopping to pay your property taxes and see how long you own your home. Your city or your county will seize it and then sell it to pay off your tax debt. That proves who really owns it in the first place, and it's not you. How about the question of who owns your body? According to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, U.S. corporations and universities already own 20% of our genetic code. Your own body, they claim, is partially the property of somebody else. So if they own your land, if they own your water and your body, how long before they can claim to own your air, your mind, and even your soul? So what do we do?
I think we're getting in really deep here.
That is pretty deep. Yeah. I mean, but point taken here.
Yeah.
Point taken. If we are not free to collect on this earth the water that falls from the sky, that's recycled from the oceans, if we're not free to use that as private citizens, if we're going to be worried about being fined, going to jail, if the only way that it can be used is that we have to end up paying for it, then once again you get back to the human rights issue of what about the poor? What about the people where there is no water? So how would you like to take that and end our show and tell us what you think, Hillary? I'm giving it to you.
Well, I'm just sort of thinking about one of the things that I think that to sum things up is that it's the whole question of the commodification of water. And when it becomes a commodity, it's not available for people. And I think that it's really important that as many people as possible are aware of and conscious of the fact that we have a right to it. And, you know, realistically, we can expect to pay for the systems in place.
Right.
You know, the water treatment plants and things like that.
Right.
And that is really what we are paying for with our taxes, is that, rather than the water itself. But I think that we need to be very vigilant about the partnerships and the relationships between our governments and the corporations, which are there to make money. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah.
And the more that we understand what we need to have rights to and what everybody needs to have reasonable access to, the more important it is.
And then take action on that.
Yes.
You know, having the understanding of it is one step, right? But then taking action.
And also taking action in terms of our use of water.
Totally.
Being aware of the ways that we abuse it, as well as the way that we use it, and that we can be very wasteful without even being conscious of it. And that most people never even give it a moment's thought. So I suppose that if what I would like to leave this with is, I'd like people to think about how much water are you using in a day? Why are you using that much? Are you using bottled water? And if so, why?
Right.
When the water is perfectly safe and drinkable, in fact, everything suggests that the water that comes out of the tap is, if anything, safer. Because now that's here. I'm not saying that's true everywhere.
True.
But here in Canada, you know, our water is safe to drink, and there's absolutely no reason we need to be creating more pollution and using more water by having bottled water, among other things.
Right.
So,
thank you.
That would be my parting words.
I think they're great parting words. I'm going to let you take it away, Jim.
Okay. I'm just going to reminisce a little bit about my experience with water. I can remember as a child, we paid a flat rate for water from our taps in my hometown.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to brush my teeth with the tap running.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of people did that.
Yes,
and
still do.
But the town now has metered water, and I've long since turned off the tap, you know, when I'm brushing my teeth. And I was also thinking about my grandparents, who they had two sources of water. They had a big cistern.
In the basement.
and that's what they used for washing with. You know, they had two pumps outside. They didn't have, well, I think they had a tap inside in the later years, but they had two pumps outside, one for the cistern and one for their well. And, I didn't think I was that old, but...
yeah, we are dating ourselves. But maybe, you know, there's so much wisdom that we could gain.
I was just going to say that.
From those older people,
yeah, and
you know,
so
and from the things that they did that were helpful and useful and sensible.
And I think the biggest thing that's happened since that time is the huge population explosion, or population, as it's sometimes referred to. The more wasteful practices really didn't matter too much when you only had a small population. But as we increase our population, the problem is just sort of galloping up behind us, and we better turn around and have a look and see what we're going to do about it. But having said that, we've run out of time, and we're going to close this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, and we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For info on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."